I'm Shi Chun Huang from University of Nevada at Las Vegas. So today I'm going to show you the evidence that there is fluid water, H2O, in the middle mantle. The work was published early this year, and the leading author is my colleague and collaborator, Olive Shannon. He has done all the synchrotron XRD measurements I present here. Okay, I will go straight because I'm not going to talk about how important the water is to the mantle. You heard enough this past week. So we found I7 inclusions in diamonds. And what is I7? Kalani gave a nice lecture last week talking about the minerals. And here I show you the first diagram of H2O. And you can see that in addition to the long ice, the ice 1H, we have many types of high pressure ice polymorphs. And in all the ice polymorphs, the H2O molecules are linked together by the hydrogen bond. In all the polymorphs, the HOH bond remains more or less the same, and basically different types of parking of H2O leads to different types of polymorphs. And today I'm going to tell you that we have only two types of the ice polymorphs classified as mineral, and why? Because in order to be qualified as a mineral, we need to have a natural hand specimen in hand. And the long ice, the ice 1H is one of them. That is the long ice that we use every day. And the second is the ice 7. It was discovered as inclusions, tiny inclusions in diamond by Oliver last year. So by that time, we are able to classify it as a mineral, even we know the existence of I7 for many years. So this is the host diamond of the type of material of I7 inclusion. I think the dimension of this piece is about somewhere between 1 to 2 centimeters. And superimposed on this shows you where the diamond 7 inclusions are. Basically, the broad area shows where the inclusions are. And the I7 has a cubic structure. It's different from the normal ice. So this is a structure. The large balls are oxygen and small ones are hydrogen. And the discovery of I7 was accidental. We were looking for something else and Oliver found it. We were studying diamond chips from Africa and China. And we examined them under the synchrotron XRD. A hard X-ray beam was focused to a dimension of about 2 microns by 3 microns, and the exposure time was about 10 seconds. The I7 was observed as isolated arrays of inclusions with a dimension of several microns by several microns. And this, I showed this in the previous slide. This is the host diamond of the type of material. This is a type 1A diamond. So if you are in the diamond business, you know that when you see this, it tells you that you have some nitrogen in the diamond. The diamond has some color. Here I show you the XRD diffraction pattern, and two types of minerals are identified. One is the I7, and the other is an iron nickel carbide. The remnant pressure of the I7 inclusion was estimated about 9 GPa. That is pretty high. I'll talk about this in a moment. And in most cases, we found that the I7 inclusions are associated with some other minerals. Here it is associated with nickel carbide, and for another example, I showed you that it is associated with some ilmenite. And in most cases, in the same host diamond, we found some other mineral inclusions. So they are locked together with the diamond with the I7 inclusions, but they are within very short distance, typically within several tens of microns. And here I show you one example. We found magnesium calcite with a very high remnant pressure. I think that's about 9 GPa. And it is very surprising to me because I learned that if you study the phase diagram, the, on high pressure, magnesite is more stable than calcite. But we found calcite. So here's a summary of all the 12 cases of I7 inclusions we found so far, published so far, and we found more, and Oliver will update with you guys at Goldschmidt. So if you go to Goldschmidt or AGU this year, just if you are interested in this study, just go to his talk. And typically, we found that we have some sodium potassium chloride in the I7 structure a little bit. And in most cases, the I7 inclusions are associated with some other minerals such as ilmenite and iron nickel carbide. And in some other cases, some other type of minerals are found as inclusions in the same host diamonds, but not together with the I7 inclusions. So we found olivine, which is very phosphorite rich, FO19-4297. We have calcite, garnet, and halite, chromite in some cases. So this type of mineral assembly looks more like a metasomatized pyridotite rather than an acrylogite. And some diamonds were also examined using IR spectroscopy. And here I show you the peaks near the 3,000 centimeter, which is associated with the ice. And on the right side, I show you the IR measurements of synthesized I7, probably over 20 years ago. And you can see that, okay, so the numbers here are the pressure in GPA. And you can see that on different pressure, this peak shifts. So ideally, you should be able to use the location of the 3,000 peak to tell the pressure of the I7 inclusions. And in fact, we did some estimate. So the remnant pressure was determined to be somewhere between 5 and 23 GPa. And you can see that this is not a good tactic because the peak is so broad. And in this case, in the upmost case, yes.
Did you try with Raman spectroscopy? Raman.
The IR is Raman. No. No. We don't. Okay. Probably we will.
You will, okay.
Yeah.
Probably. I suspect it is. So when you get this pressure, is that just like the pressure that the diamond is exerting on the thing, or is that the pressure where it formed?
I will get to that point. That's great. Just give me 1 minute.
Okay, thank you.
I will go right to that. Okay, so it is not a good tactic, and the peak is broad, and in this case, this Suisson peak is sitting on the shield of this huge H2O peak. So it is hard to do the estimate. And we have the molar volume measured by XRD that listed here. And we also load the I7, the equation of status of I7. I just plotted it here, the volume against the pressure. The points are the experiment measurements published, and the lines are of initial calculations from our collaborator Zhongqing Wu and his student at University of Science and Technology of China. So basically, if you load the volume, you are able to read from this diagram its remnant pressure. So here are the results of the remnant pressure of the 12 I7 inclusions we have, and they cluster around 10 GPA and two around 25 GPA. And that asks the German question. So, okay, so they are the pressure measured when the diamonds are sitting on 1 atmospheric pressure at room temperature. And we know that when the diamonds formed, they formed deep in the earth, right? So we need to put the diamond back to the deep mantle, then the diamond will deform a little bit, and then the temperature increases a lot. So we are interested in entrapment PT condition of the I-7 inclusions. So basically, we load the PT condition at the surface, and we want to load the PT condition at the deep mantle. And how do we do that? And I just learned that it is a good thing to study inclusions in diamonds because diamond is so rigid. Okay, and I learned that the volume change between the surface condition and deep mantle condition for diamond is about 5% or even less. So basically, that tells you that the I-7 inclusion follows this so-called the isochoric path. Basically, its volume is fixed, and when so that means if you load the equation of status of the I-7 inclusion, you should calculate this path very easily. However, there's a question. There's a problem, because we know that on the long momentum PT condition, the I-7 is not stable. And here are the I-7 melt lines taken from the published data. And here are the long geotherms. I mean, okay, taking whatever uncertainty you want. You know that under the long momentum conditions, I-7 is not stable. So in order to reconstruct this PT path, we had to use the equation of state of fluid water. So we took whatever the published EOS of fluid water and use up and lower boundary as uncertainty, and we reconstruct the PT paths for the two clusters. And here the shaded ones are the two PT paths, and they cut the geotherm at a depth between 440 and 810. kilometers. So basically, that is within the transition zone to the up-lower mantle. Okay. Early on, I showed you that we have some other inclusions, some other mineral inclusions associated with I-7, and we have one ilmenite, and we did the same exercise for that ilmenite, and there its path is shown as a diamond here, and you can see that the ilmenite PT path cuts the mantle geotherm at a similar depth. Okay, I think so far, I hope I convinced you that we have fluid water at middle mantle. And then I will try to say something to generate discussions, because I did not realize that I have longer time than I thought. Last week, Dan reminded me that the existence of I-7 in the mantle was predicted some year ago by someone. So I dig out this paper by Binner and Nowotsky. And here, that's a PT diagram showing for several geotherm along several types of slabs. And this thick dashed line shows the I-7 toward the first boundary. And their argument is that on some cold subduction zone, you may have PT conditions that is favorable for the existence of I-7. Okay, this paper only shows you that there is a PT condition inside the deep mantle that you might have I-7, but it does not tell you why you have I-7 there or why you have fluid water there. So I try to answer that question, and using this diagram, I'm pretty sure that you have seen this a lot at the site, including last week. So for many years, we know that the water solubility of the mantle transition zone minerals is much higher by that of the up or the lower mantle minerals by a factor of 10 or even higher. So Berkovich and Corrado proposed this model. Basically, they argue that if this is the case, the mantle transition zone might be water rich. And then in their cartoon, they show that if you have upwelling mantle floor, when the material leaving the mantle transition zone, it breaks down into olivine. Okay. And olivine is not able to hold too much water. So the water dissolved in the silicates now is released as free H2O. It is not OH anymore, it is free H2O. And in some time, if the PT condition is favorable, you will generate dehydration melting just at the 410, and that is what they show this as a melt layer. So that is their original model. And in fact, if you follow the same logic, if you have downwelling mantle flow, you expect the same thing to happen at the 660s, exactly the same thing. When the material leaves the mantle transition zone, the bridgeman knot is not able to hold too much water, so the water is released. Okay, so that is his model, and are there any evidence, hard evidence for that? So I try to give you two, and one is the another diamond inclusion study by Graham Pearson published probably 2 years ago. Basically, they found a ringwoodite inclusion in a diamond from Brazil. And then they measured the water content. They argue that there is about 1.5 wet percent water in the ringwoodite. So that is a lot of water. So that is evidence for a wet mantle transition zone. And here I bring another study by some seismologists. I think you guys understand this figure much better than I do. Basically, they argue that on this continent, they observed a very positive PS over P arrives near the 660s. And their argument is that is the presence of melt, and they basically borrowed this model to explain their seismic studies. So I think I showed you that there is a way to generate fluid water at 660s, and then how do you put that in diamonds? Okay, and I think that might be easier to do that. Another cartoon, basically, here it shows that, okay, your lower mantle beneath 660 is dominated by bridgmanite. Bridgmanite is able to handle a lot of iron 3, and we know that in the mantle, in the typical mantle, the iron stays, majority of iron stays as iron plus 2. So if you have a sink for iron 3, you might be able to break the iron plus 2 to metal iron plus iron 3, which is stored by the bridgmanite. So this paper argued that at lower mantle, you might have 1% free metal in the mantle. So that is a very, very reducing environment. So it means that you are able to form diamonds beneath 660s. So you have fluid water, and you can form diamond. And you put these two together, you're going to have fluid rich. Well, you're going to have fluid inclusions in diamonds. And when you put the diamonds on the surface, the temperature drops, but the pressure somehow holds there, so you end up with I7 inclusions. So to conclude, I showed you that the I7 now is a twistrian mineral because we have a hand specimen, and the existence of I7 inclusions in diamonds can have a shows that there is fluid water in the middle mantle, probably at the mantle transition zone, and that will have a lot of implications to our understanding of the mantle evolution and geodynamics. It will, for example, it might be able to mobilize some heat-producing elements such as potassium, thorium, uranium, and it also affects the water budget of the Earth and probably some volatiles. And I think the last thing is a question for me is that, okay, so is this a global phenomenon or a regional phenomenon? So that means more measurements on diamonds are needed. So I will stop here.
Quick question. Great study. One question that I have is, if you have fluid water, which can induce melting at deep Earth, then I would expect that the melt and the fluid will form a supercritical liquid. How would you, they would be miscible, that's what I'm trying to aim at. How
right.
would you then segregate the fluid out of that melt and then encapsulate it? Why not have a melt encapsulated in your diamond? Am I making sense?
Yes, we were questioned by one of the reviews by the same, exact same question. So I think that, okay. So it's not you. okay, so the idea is that if you put water with silicates together, you will not get pure water. We don't know. We saw what we see, and I guess that if the temperature is not high enough, you may not have superfluid there. I mean, that means the water may not react with silicate rocks, but I don't know. Yes.
I wonder. I'm thinking about superionic ice and the reevaluations of the H2O phase diagram that have appeared recently. And superionic ice is stable to quite high temperature. I don't know if it quite reaches your conditions, but obviously it starts out as superionic ice, and it wouldn't have the same miscibility properties with silicates.
Yes, that is possible.
Lars, can you tell us what superionic ice is?
So superionic ice has a rigid oxygen sublattice, but the hydrogens are diffused freely through the structure.
So my understanding is that you don't have the hydrogen bond anymore.
Right.
So it is iron.
Probably you mentioned it, but just wondering, your sample shows those inclusions is I7 as a mineral, as a crystalline phase, right? In the sample, in the diamond inclusion. In the inclusion of the sample of the diamond,
uh-huh.
What you actually examine is the I7 as a crystalline phase or a fluid.
Okay, it's a good question. So it is not a big inclusion. We think that there's very, very tiny inclusions for the area that we examined. It might contain thousands or tens, up to tens of thousands of small ice inclusions because the XRD pattern looks like a powder pattern. It's not a single crystal.
Because I noticed that your FTIR spectrum is quite broad. One explanation could be it's just amorphous. It's liquid. Or
there's XRD.
Oh, okay. But in the Earth interior, like the PD condition you infer, it should be a crystalline phase or fluid.
Well, I think it should be fluid, but Lars just remind me that it could be superionic crystal. I don't know. I think someone needs to put, well, you did put I7 on that high pressure.
So this is just a question for clarification. You said that the other mineral inclusions that you found in the diamond suggest that it was actually surrounding mantle that was trapped inside of the diamond and not like subducted material. But in this cartoon that you showed on the last slide, it seemed like the melting occurred at the subducted material.
Are you talking about here?
Yes. So which one is it?
Okay, I think I should remove this. The only thing I want to make use is this pattern. That means at lower mantle, you will have about 1% free metal. So the lower mantle is a very reducing environment. And you can, that means you can form diamonds here. And you may be able to form diamonds at the near the subducting slab, but you don't need to.
Okay, so I do agree that you should remove this diagram because it causes some confusion, but that adds my question, which is that you saw this iron nickel carbide inclusion together with water. So what this paper suggests is that at the lower mantle, you have a switch from diamond stability field to iron nickel carbide stability field, because you are going really reducing. So you're not going to stabilize diamond. According to this paper, it'll consume diamond and form iron carbide. So, you know, going back to your observation, I was really puzzled how you can observe iron carbide together inside a diamond in that case.
I don't know. My understanding that the inclusions are so tiny. Okay. So you may start with some metal there, and then you form carbide, and it does not destroy the diamond crystal.
You might be at the oxygen fugacity right at the boundary between diamond stability and, you know, carbide stability, but it's hard to imagine that you can have that oxygen fugacity right value in between those two phases for such large depth range. I mean, it's not a criticism. I'm just stunned that it is possible that way.
I agree with you. I mean, we still have a lot of questions that we don't understand. And basically, at the beginning, I did not even believe that there is fluid water in the deep mantle.
All right, I'm going to make a comment. I don't think you should remove the subductinous slab because you make the case that the source was metasomatized.
Okay.
And if the source is metasomatized, where is that coming from? Plus, you need to explain how you're going to form diamonds. Yeah, but like you need to stir that thing. It's not going to happen just because some arrows go around.
Uh-huh.
Okay, there needs to be a subductinous slab acting there and, you know, also adding water to the transition zone.
Yeah.
So it's part of the story. And the other thing is, you know, like the isotopic evidence showed that most diamonds, at least the ones that people use in their rings, they have an organic source. So if there is an organic source, I mean that how we put organic stuff in the deep earth, we need a subductinous slab. So I think it makes sense to keep it there.
Okay, I just have a comment. I think the reason for the organic source is based on the carbon isotopes. Is that right?
Some of that, yes.
Yeah, but I still don't understand how you fractionate the carbon isotopes when you form diamonds. I think the whole argument was based on the assumption that when you form the diamonds, you don't fractionate the carbon isotopes. But I don't know.
I have a comment that I think will maybe be helpful for the students to think about when they think about groups. And I'm so glad you're on this slide because actually these results are, let's say, perplexing, the seismological ones. The blue here indicates that velocity increases abruptly with depth. That is expected at the 660. The red means that velocity drops abruptly at depth. Notice that the red occurs at more like 700 or 750 kilometers depth. That means that you go up in velocity and then you drop at 750 kilometers depth, where the melt that you would expect to see would actually be between 660 and 720 or something like that. So I do not know, or I don't understand, but maybe that's because I don't understand the kind of the processes that are going on, but I don't really understand how that figure on the left can be interpreted in terms of water, because to me, water would make a different kind of a signal. And furthermore, it's a little odd that in a region where you expect broad upwelling, you would see this when, in fact, you need downwelling to do it, and then that you would not see anything at the 410 that accompanies it. So all in all, this might be a good project where we could take our constraints from geochemistry on the composition, we can take mineral physics, we can make some predictions about what happens as you advect parcels of material up above and below the 660, and then model to see whether we would actually get receiver function common conversion point stacks that look anything like these images.
I mean, Ved, I was involved with that study, and in terms of, I mean, half of what you just said is wrong, right? The, what is not shown in this picture is that we computed where mantle flow goes down, and it turned out that the region where you have this slow layer is exactly in those region where you would expect mass transport. So there is a physical mechanism as to the resolution of the receiver functions, and if melt layer would be shallower, and if it would be smeared out in the way it is shown there. I think we did some synthetics on that, I can't remember, but that I cannot speak to. But this is not a region where we expect an upwelling, it's a region where we expect a downwelling.
And what about the 410?
I like it too.
Sorry, I was wrong about the downwelling or the upwelling, but this kind of, I think, problem is something where really having four people sitting in a room that have four different sets of expertise is really helpful for. And if we can bring diamonds into it, all the better, right?
I don't mind.
Four 10 means cool rather than slap. You have to make this thing happen, but the upwelling is a